Right.
Good afternoon, everyone. And with that gavel, I will convene the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is the 13th of February, so everybody remember to go home and buy flowers tonight. And we have a work session scheduled, so I'm going to go ahead and open the work session and ask Ms. Deister to tell us a little bit more about the Employment Department's Modernization Initiative Status Report.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, you will recall that there was a policy option package for the Employment Department's budget that was approved that included expenditure limitation and position authority for planning purposes to modernize their information systems. And there was also a request at the time that this was approved for them to come back to us with a status report on how that is going. Along with the recommendation was an understanding that one position and a portion of that expenditure limitation would be unscheduled until the status report was presented. So they've got some good news. They've recently achieved a couple of milestones, but not to steal their thunder, I will.
All right, well, if we could get Director Erickson and Ms. Royström to come forward, we can do that. Meanwhile, I'll ask Ms. Deister. I'm seeing on my desk a detailed Ways and Means Subcommittee procedure sheet with step-by-step instructions on how to conduct these work sessions. Have we been doing something wrong?
No. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, that is just a helpful reminder in case you get, you know, motions and things like that.
Well,
it's kind of a nice...
In case we get befuddled during the short session.
Exactly.
All right.
It's been several months. You may be out of practice.
Prior to befuddlement, may I ask a question as they're getting settled of the agency?
Sure, let's jump right in. Senator Johnson.
I don't know how far down the path you are, and we will find out in the course of the next hour and a half. And I know this happens all the time, that there are vendors prowling the halls of this building trying to sell products. I was approached by an aforementioned vendor about your system. And the question that was posed to me is, would it be advantageous to have a system that coordinated unemployment benefits with Medicaid recipients so that you had that correlation, because the two populations frequently overlap? And I was told that that was not the state of the art right now, that they're two completely different systems. And I would just ask your reaction in terms of what is the status. If there is a similar population served by two agencies, would it or would it not make sense to have the computers that were able to speak to each other or, frankly, manage benefit packages simultaneously? How's that for a ringer? And I didn't give you the courtesy of telling you I was going to ask you that. So, colleague, she's taken completely unawares by this question. And frankly, I don't know the answer, so there's no subtext to this question. Mine is a genuine inquiry about, is there a smarter, better way to do it? And has your ship so left the dock that this is a moot conversation?
So, Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, good afternoon. First of all, just to broadly answer your question, it is a good question. It's a question we are asking ourselves as well. It's a complicated question because the systems that we currently have don't do that. And the systems that we're looking at won't wholesale do that. Key to the conversation, for example, is around eligibility. So, for example, for human services kinds of programs, the eligibility question is really about income, and it's needs-based. For us, for unemployment insurance benefits, the question, our benefits are not needs-based. They're earned as part of a history of employment. And so, so certain elements of our business and how we how we enter people into the queue are not aligned. That being said, our populations that we serve certainly are aligned. And so it will be part of this next deeper dive we do as we look at business requirements to really see how much bang can we get for a buck.
Mr. Chair, follow. You've answered my question. And what what you said and what I heard, I'm going to repeat just to make sure that I got it, that you are willing to take a look at, is there any opportunity to see? And believe me, I'm not making a case for one system versus another. I think so many of us have sat in this room and been burned to a crisp by bad computer decisions. And then we come back in hindsight and provide more money, and we go through the, I wish we'd thought of this, I wish we'd done this differently. And I'm just asking, in the front end load, could you look at that? And I heard you say you could and you would, and I'm done.
Thank you, Senator. Co-chairs, you exactly heard what I said. So.
Well, thank you.
All right. Well, again, before we jump into the actual report, Representative Nierman has a question.
Thank you, Chair Gomberg. So, and I just want to get in behind Senator Johnson, and I think her question's a good one. And I just want to say that I think there's fairly easy ways to do what she's wanting to be done. I know that it's frustrating to agencies and frustrating to me to see that data doesn't flow amongst agencies so easily. There are easy kind of ways to do that, to set it up in generic ways. There's open source API systems that let databases talk to each other. So I hope you do put some front end things on that. I'll also, if I can do a little commercial for something that I've been pushing, is one of the stage gate documents that I think needs to exist, and probably not at stage one where you're at, but a little bit farther down the line, is to have a transparency plan. And that's a plan, you're going to create a database somewhere and it's going to be filled with data. A plan for how that data gets shared with other agencies and how that data gets shared in some ways with the public in a real-time way. And so maybe you can put that on your list of things to include on in your project there. And you don't have to respond to that, but just that's just a comment. So.
Representative Reardon has a question, but before you ask it, Ms. Erickson, I'm going to ask you just to identify yourself for the record. We jumped in so quickly. We didn't invite you to tell us who you are.
Oh, my goodness. That is a rookie error on my part. My name is Kay Erickson. I'm the director of the Oregon Employment Department. With me today is Renee Royston, who is our modernization director. So thank you for pointing out that error.
Representative Reardon.
Just a comment and then a question. So I have a bill in my committee, higher ed workforce, where we're having community colleges will be looking at ways to weave the different benefits together for, to the greatest advantage of the student. So, you know, some kind of a connection of those benefits to employment would be helpful. Also, I think of work systems, and they have their workforce centers, and they're constantly looking at benefits and job opportunities and so forth. So it just seems natural that these would be an interconnection. And I must confess, somebody planted this question. I don't know. So is there a connection with the Magi / Medicare project?
That's what I was referring to.
Okay. Thank you.
So just quickly, Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, Rep. Reardon, there is not a current connection in that we're not currently anticipating to kind of tag team our developments. There's certainly an ongoing conversation, as we just discussed, about are we serving the same populations? Are there benefits? Can we take advantage of developments that have already been made? And that will be part of this next deeper dive back to Senator Johnson's very first question. Yeah. We're not too far down the road to have ruled any of that out,
okay,
or to have ruled any of it in.
Okay, thank you. It's super, super important work.
All right, any other questions? Well, then let's move to the work session information.
All right. So good morning, afternoon, actually, now that I'm flustered a bit. So as requested, we provided a written report on the status of our modernization effort to date. And we're here today as a follow-up to our testimony in April 2017 to give you that update in person. So as you know, the mission of the Employment Department is to support business and promote employment. We have three core programs: unemployment insurance, responsible for collecting taxes and determining and administering benefits; workforce operations, responsible for operating the 37 WorkSource Oregon job centers that Rep. Reardon just referred to across the state; and workforce and economic research, responsible for developing and distributing labor market information. As you know, and you may recall from our testimony during the 2017 session, our core systems supporting unemployment insurance functions were designed in the 1990s, long before the widespread use of internet to transmit information and conduct business. These are mainframe systems written in COBOL programming language and our workforce operations job matching system is about 14 years old at this point. Business needs continue to evolve, making our business processes increasingly inefficient as we deploy workarounds because we are limited by our aging infrastructure. We want to serve Oregonians and Oregon businesses better. The goal of our modernization effort is to transform and replace core business and IT systems, specifically those that support receipt of UI taxes, payment of benefits, and delivery of employment services. And again, the purpose is to better meet the needs of our customers. What are the primary drivers for modernization? We want to be sure we can provide the services our customers need, and we can't be sure of that in our current situation with our aging systems. We want to provide employers and job seekers with personalized and updated services, things we have all come to expect, like online self-service and mobile technology. We want to interact and share data with our partners in a secure way using modern and flexible technologies. We want modern systems that allow updates and improvements in a fast and flexible manner and support our ability to adapt to changing business, state, and federal requirements. Finally, we want our employees to spend their time doing what they love, serving customers, not negotiating inefficient business processes. These are the steps and approvals called stage gates. They're required in order for us to evaluate, procure, and implement replacement business systems as part of our modernization program. Stage gate process, I'm sure as you know, is a project management technique in which an initiative is divided into stages or phases separated by gates. The Office of the State CIO and the Ledge Fiscal Office have jointly adopted a process for agency projects that includes generally four stages with requested endorsements by both oversight areas in order for each stage to move ahead. So generally, stage one, where we are just departing, is the origination and initiation phase. So it's really the high-level description of the problem you're trying to solve and your early thoughts and ideas you have about what you're proposing to do. Stage two requires refining your business case, understanding and defining the scope of your project, and developing the next more detailed level of project plans, schedules, and budgets. Stage three is the phase where you actually start evaluating proposals and again refine your project plans once again, this time to support implementation of the selected systems and vendors. And finally, stage four is executing against your project plan, engaging quality assurance, and implementing this system and providing training to users. So for us, because our modernization program will include really more than one project, we'll likely repeat stages, stage gates two and three probably for each project. And then when all of the projects that are under this umbrella are complete, we'll do a stage gate four endorsement for the entire modernization effort. That's our understanding at this point. And we will continue to work closely with the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Office of the State CAO to make sure that we are understanding their requirements.
Senator Johnson.
Over what period of time does all of this occur? Because one of the things that I've questioned is the obsolescence. Technology seems to be moving so quickly, and I don't want us at the end of all of these stages to buy a Betacam.
What's a Betacam?
I'd be happy to show you the one in my garage.
Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, that is a question that we're attempting to answer in this next phase. So in part, it depends on what ends up being in scope. In part, it depends on how we sequence each system that we're seeking to replace. And in part, it depends on how much work we can do concurrently and how much risk we're willing to accept to work concurrently. So at this point, we anticipate probably full implementation of all systems in 2020, 2021, so several, a few to a several years.
Colleagues, I guess it makes me question, DMV is undergoing a IT upgrade that's going to take 10 years. And I think of the technological changes in 10 years, and I have mused quietly and aloud that we're buying a pig in a poke there, but I don't know that. It just seems 10 years is an awfully long time.
Co-chairs, Senator Johnson, I just realized I misspoke. 2020 would be when we were likely be implementing the first project, right? Because there's procurement work to do in the next year, detailed requirements. So 2020 would be initiating probably the first project with maybe 5 to 7 years after that. So to your point, a long time.
One other piece, we sat in the same room, was it just yesterday?
It seems like a longer.
And heard Department of Revenue talk about their core replacement. And I think that many of us believed in the two preceding biennia that we were buying a thing, and that the thing had a price, and it would be deployed, and we would be done. And it came as a giant disappointment that we were not buying a thing. We were corrected yesterday. We were buying an environment. And we didn't get some of the check processing elements that we thought. And it now turns out that we're going to be shoveling millions of more dollars into settling that system at DOR on top of the millions we've already spent. And I think for many people in the legislature, we are getting so burned with these IT projects that don't work. And what I'm looking for is certainly not the nuts and bolts. I leave that to Representative Nierman and people who understand the language of IT. I just don't want any more surprises.
Co-Chair Johnson, Chair Gomberg, I hear you. And you will hear through the course of my testimony, I hope, how we have spent this last 9 months really trying to learn from people's mistakes and from their successes so that we set up ourselves to understand the full scope of what we're undertaking. That being said, right, we're continuously learning. It's the first time we've done this, which is why we're talking to people who have gone before us. And, you know, every day we learn something new.
Please continue.
So that brings us to the purpose of our appearance today, which is to update you on the accomplishments since April 2017 when we last met with the committee. Our effort is on time, within budget, and within scope. We've achieved two major milestones, as we had planned at this point in the biennium, and that is receiving our Stage Gate 1 endorsement and completing our contract for a feasibility study. And we're continuing to make progress on the detailed work necessary for us to begin procurement activities.
Senator.
Who is your LFO IT analyst?
It is Mr. McSpaden.
Okay. And then when you say getting a contract, what's that contract look like, and who with, and was it competitive, and is it associated with the vendor who is selling the equipment? I want to know a little bit more about who your outside professionals are.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, I have that all of that detail in upcoming slides. So receiving StageGate 1 endorsement allows us to proceed and formally initiate our modernization program. As required by the state's oversight process and in alignment with project management protocols, we submitted a number of documents defining our approach to modernization in order to receive this endorsement. You can see the list on the screen there, a high-level initial business case that describes the primary reasons we'd like to modernize, an information resource request that summarizes the budget and funding for the current biennium, a management plan that describes practices and processes we'll use to manage, a governance plan that identifies the individuals who have oversight and accountability for ensuring that we achieve our expected outcomes, a steering committee charter that describes our steering committee, its purpose, how often it meets, and its scope, a risk and issue management plan that describes how risks to the programs will be identified, analyzed, and mitigated, and finally, an initial risk assessment that identifies risks that we know of at this point.
Senator.
Sorry.
Oh, don't be.
That seems like a really process-heavy plan. And I'm just trying to figure out how, with all of these different governance and management and steering committee, how, if something goes wrong, it does not devolve into everybody pointing at somebody else. I'm really looking for the true accountability. And I don't see an org chart that says if there is a catastrophic error here and we squander millions of dollars, who did it? Who made the call?
Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson. So if we had brought the governance plan for you or the risk and issue management plan, you would see exactly that. So the governance plan specifies who's responsible for making sure budget, scope, schedule is adhered to. It identifies stakeholders, metrics, quality assurance, how change leadership will be conducted, the staffing levels, reporting, et cetera. It identifies decision levels and escalation paths. And then the risk and issue management plan. So it sounds process heavy, but it's ensuring that you understand before you embark on a project of this size, really who is accountable and responsible for what kinds of things and when you escalate and how things get resolved. Is that
help? One follow-on is that over the period of time that you've outlined to get this system deployed, you're going to have some change of personnel. Have you contemplated what the bench looks like and how you have any degree of redundancy or continuity if somebody decides they want to go to New Mexico and go to work?
Senator Johnson, members of the committee, certainly as much as we can anticipate those things, yes. Currently, our steering committee consists of our entire executive team, both directors of our program areas and their deputies. It includes our administrative functions leads. It includes two representatives from the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, with whom we work most closely in delivering employment services. It has a representative from the Office of the State CIO. So, you know, not knowing what we don't know, right, and preparing as much as we can prepare without being too process heavy, back to your earlier point, I feel pretty confident at this point that we've got a good strong team in place.
Representative Nieren.
Ms. Erickson, can you provide all those documents to me or possibly to the committee? I'd be happy if you just put them on OLIS, just a copy of every one of those documents.
Co-chairs, Rep. Neergaard, I believe so, yes. I believe they're public documents.
Thank you.
It may be, you may not want to put them on OLIS, but I will leave that to...
Co-chairs, Representative Neergaard, we can certainly ensure that you get them. I know that they are on file both with the CIO and with LFO. I think OLIS is technically a committee document sharing type of thing. So, but we
That's
can
fine.
Certainly make sure that you get them.
As long as I get them. Thanks.
Okay.
Okay, very good.
All right, so another important milestone was completing our contract for a feasibility study, which was the first major task of modernization. And briefly, and to bring us to a very high level, Merriam-Webster defines a feasibility study as a study to show if something can be done, right? So I like the simplicity of that definition, and it doesn't begin to describe the amount of work that is involved. So for this feasibility study, we contracted with the IT Support Center. We began the study in November 2016 and completed the contract last month. And as you may recall from our last update, the IT Support Center is a nonprofit organization housed in the National Association of State Workforce Agencies, funded by grants from the U.S. Department of Labor, and governed by state unemployment insurance and workforce agency leaders. They're quite familiar with the systems in use and the modernizations underway in states across the nation. And they, to your point, Senator Johnson, they don't sell a product of their own, but they live in this environment of negotiating between our national association and the Department of Labor and understanding really kind of programmatically what our services entail. The components of the feasibility study included high-level assessments of business needs, system functionality and technology, available market solutions, and our readiness to undertake this effort. The feasibility study also included a gap analysis, and the purpose of the gap analysis was to help us identify the gap between what we have, what we want, and what's really truly available. As part of the gap analysis, the modernization team and many employment department employees attended webinar demonstrations provided by other state workforce agencies. Representatives from each business area of the agency participated in these demonstrations, and the purpose and what they helped us do was to expand our knowledge of systems already successfully deployed in other states and broaden our vision for what is possible in the future. The feasibility study also included a market survey or market review, and the purpose of the market review was to learn about the variety of development and implementation models and approaches that states have employed. Employees and members from our vendor team traveled to selected states to learn about their experiences. The site visit travel team consisted of steering committee and subject matter experts from all of our major programs and support functions. And again, these visits allowed us to further refine our understanding of the various types of systems that are already working well in other states, as well as gather lessons learned from both their good and bad experiences and best practices based on each state's path to modernization.
Mr. Chair.
Please.
You may have said this, Ms. Erickson, but employment department staff and vendors. So your staff are traveling with potential vendors or with the selected vendor, or I just must have missed something.
Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, just this selected IT Support Center vendor who is, again, affiliated with our National Association and the U.S. Department of Labor, not a vendor that will be selling us a system in the future.
Okay, and if this is the national organization, they are going to look at other states' successes and failures? I mean, these guys are supposed to be the experts. What are they on fact-finding trips for if they're the recognized experts?
Co-Chair Gomberg and Co-Chair Johnson, they are on fact-finding missions to continue to expand their base of knowledge. Each time a state modernizes, they modernize from a different starting point with a different set of technology and systems. Our programs are structured differently in different states. So they are continuing to learn and to educate themselves as they were, as we were kind of going through some of these first phases of feasibility together.
Of the six, of the six states that you visited, how many of them have off the shelf, or how much, how many of them have customized programs?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, I can't answer that off the top of my head. What I can tell you as we get to future slides, one of the key learnings was there are no real off-the-shelf systems in our world, especially when we're looking at unemployment insurance and taxes.
Okay. Go back for just a second. Then what are you inquiring about in Idaho, Kentucky, Michigan, Mississippi? They're all different.
Co-chairs, we're looking to find, again, the gap between what we want, what we have, and what's available, and trying to align our current systems environment, IT, with who others out there that might be closest to us, so we can leverage from their experience and not be at the beginning of a, at the, you know, not be developing a system of our own.
One last, Mr. Chair. So do all of those six states that are listed up there have different systems? Obviously, you've already answered that because their metrics are different. Do they all have different vendors?
Co-chairs, I may toss this one to Renee because her level of experience with the vendors and the systems is much deeper than mine. So don't forget to introduce yourself.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, my name is Renee Royston. I am the Modernization Program Director. Senator Johnson, to answer your question, you had originally asked how many of these states have custom as opposed to like a commercial off-the-shelf type product. The states that we visited, of the six, there were two that have what they would deem custom solutions. Those were Idaho and Mississippi. All of the states, though, use some form of vendor to do their implementation, including those that did custom build. And every state that we visited had a different vendor solution. The reason why we went to these select states was to look at the approach that they used towards modernization. Some states obviously had custom. That was by design that we went to see states that chose that path. We also went to states that had what would be deemed more of a transfer solution, where they were taking a system from another state, and something that is more aligned with a COTS or COTS-like, and what our vendor and the IT support center was deeming a framework. And so of the six states, we saw a variety. Some states we went and we visited to talk to their UI programs or unemployment insurance programs, and other states we went and talked to them about their workforce systems, and then some of the states when we were there, we looked at everything that they had. So it just was really dependent on who they had of their systems, what they'd modernized, and what vendor approach we were looking at.
Thank you.
So as I said, we completed the contract for the feasibility study last month, and we're currently reviewing the documents from the IT Support Center. So we've already learned a lot from our work with the IT Support Center and our interaction with the other states. Some of our early assumptions were supported and some were not. For example, we learned fairly early that there is no single existing system to meet all of our business needs, meaning we can't bundle employment insurance, tax benefits, and employment services into a single system without doing a custom application. We discovered there are no off-the-shelf products, especially for tax and benefits. And we confirmed some of our early thinking, which I believe we testified in last session, was if you've seen one state, you've seen one state, meaning that each state's path is somewhat unique. And the work we've done to this point will help us determine our own somewhat unique path forward. So although states have approached their modernization using different development models, we did find that all of the systems we observed could meet our high-level business needs. So back to the very early definition of feasibility, you know, looking to see if something can be done, we found out it can be done. We also found out that there were common lessons learned and recommended best practices that we'll incorporate. One of those things being data readiness is essential to effective transition and implementation of new systems. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Projects must be adequately staffed to be successful. Replacing legacy systems requires widespread business transformation and cultural change. So don't underestimate the effort necessary to support employees and begin your organizational change management strategy early. Plan for ongoing maintenance and support, to your point, Senator Johnson, earlier, and really understand the timing and effort required to retire legacy systems, right? This is not all about the new stuff. It's about we're going to have some scope, some things we'll replace, some things we won't, and then understanding the cost of carrying both new systems and old systems forward. The IT Support Center was impressed with the level of advocacy and engagement from our executive leadership team, our project team, and our IT leaders. They acknowledged the skills of our IT technicians in managing our current environment, but also noted IT is a key area to focus resources for training, retooling, and hiring. And they encouraged us to clearly define the must-haves from the nice-to-haves as we move forward with our deeper look at requirements. And finally, to recognize that compromise will be necessary because we aren't building a custom application. As I mentioned earlier, every state noted that preparation and understanding of current data and computer systems is critical for modernization success. In September 2017, we formed a data and systems work group to help us fully understand the data we gather and use, where it comes from, who owns it, what it means, how it could be used, how it is used, how clean it is, that is, what's the quality of our current data, and finally, with whom we share it. This work will allow us to identify opportunities to improve how we manage, store, protect, and share data in the future. The work group will also compile an inventory of our computer systems. And as we painstakingly identify the specific systems and applications and databases that will be replaced, it's also important for us to understand the interfaces and connections within our internal architecture and to partner and enterprise systems as well. Understanding our data and current system dependencies is the next foundational work that we will be doing and will help us define the scope of modernization and really understand the impact on employees, customers, partners, and stakeholders. So that brings me to my final slide of the day. Just a little preview of the activities we'll be working on in the coming months and the rest of the biennium. Defining that clear scope of the systems that will be replaced and those things that won't be. Preparing detailed requirements, both functional and technical, for procurement activity and for use when we select new systems and vendors. Determining our replacement approach and sequence and preparing requests for proposals. Continued inspection and documentation of our data and systems. Developing our change management plan and strategy. Validating with employees and partners the initial work we've done to document our current state and our process flows. And then completing that future state visioning and understanding how our work aligns with other enterprise projects and the state's information resource management strategy. And then finally, developing our 2019-21 budget that we will bring for you all to weigh in on in the future.
Senator Johnson.
In looking at your budget request, and you must already be thinking about it because I think instructions have gone out to the agencies to begin to put those together, you must have some sense of what you're looking for in terms of financial commitment from the state. So question number one is, can you share that preliminary estimate? And number two is, have you figured out where in this continuum, this is a phrase I used yesterday, we cross the Rubicon? When have we spent so much money that we can't go back? And that's a lesson learned from Owen. We got so deep into Owen when it appeared that this is the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network. We were so deep into Owen when it was clear it was failing that we couldn't go back home. We just had to keep spending money, even on a project that was not going to deliver anywhere close to what the promise had been. So those are my two questions.
Co-chairs, members, I'm not sure I have an answer for either one of those yet. We haven't really begun to put pencil to paper to plan out our next budget. I anticipate it would be similar to the team we have during this biennium, with probably augmentation in our IT arena. It really depends on kind of these coming months and the decisions we make about which system goes first, how long do we think that will take us, how much do we think it will cost, how long does procurement take. So I'm not trying to be obtuse. I really don't know yet.
Okay, and then one other question, Mr. Chair, that I would add to the list of imponderables is, who's going to write the vendor contract? I hear way too often that we have written contracts that put the state of Oregon at a disadvantage, that they are unenforceable, that we find out in litigation we lose because we have done a very subpar job of writing binding documents. What's the review process? Are you going to rely on DOJ? You're going to have outside counsel put the thing together? You're going to sign the vendor's contract? What's your insurance mechanism that if, God forbid, something goes wrong, that we have an enforceable legal document?
Co-chairs, members, Senator Johnson, so given the size of this effort, we will do the procurement in conjunction with the Department of Administrative Services and DOJ. We will also heavily leverage the work that's been done by other states in their procurements, and continue to have our kind of interaction with the IT Support Center and our National Association, because those documents can be really useful in terms of their individual approaches.
Forgive me, Ms. Erickson, I have great respect for you, but that answer was so superficial, I couldn't make heads or tails out of it. You don't have to answer it now, but I would just add that to the list of things that I'm worried about.
Other questions?
I have some questions.
Please, Representative Dearman.
So, Ms. Erickson, so I think, if I remember right, there's quite a bit of federal participation in this project, right? So is there going to be federal oversight of this project? And if so, can you tell me how that works? I think we've had that on other projects, and it's kind of opaque to me. So if you could just tell me what your understanding of is how that works.
Mm-hmm. Chair Gomberg, Rep. Nierman, you do recall correctly that the funding for this project is federal dollars. So in the early years of the Great Recession, the federal government incented states to modernize, I think at that point, their laws pertaining to benefits, unemployment insurance benefits, by holding out some money as a reward. So we have in our UI Trust Fund, I don't remember the exact amount of money. When we received it, it was $85 million. So to date, it's probably $83 million, something like that. As far as federal oversight, that's an interesting question and not exactly clear to me either. So these dollars are free and clear for us to use in modernization. The current administration, many high-level offices are not yet staffed. In the past, we had, I think, clearer input about, you know, mirroring the experiences of states that, you know, had a good path to modernization. And the current environment, I'm not quite sure what level of oversight the feds will have.
So can I follow with just one? So you are going through the stage gate process, and so that will require you to have a third-party QA vendor. So that'll be just a normal part of oversight then also. Then. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Burden.
Thank you, Chair. Co-Chair Gomberg. I just want to go back just to the first question where we started the hearing, and I think you probably did a better job answering my question than I did listening. So, but just for clarification, is there some place in the presentation that we've just had that needs to be reworked, like the feasibility study or the system functionality technology assessment, something like that, that will help us answer the question about possibly integrating with other systems?
Co-chairs, Representative Reardon. No, I don't think there is anything that needs to be reworked. I think that's work going forward as we dive deeper into our more detailed business requirements. So before we would put out a request for proposal, we would go through a very detailed process of listing every single thing we might want the system to do. And then you go through and you sort those requirements by must-haves and nice-to-haves. And given what we know about the systems that we have looked at and that are working properly in other states, we do think that we will gain some efficiencies in our partnership work. For example, with the Department of Human Services, we work closely with the local workforce boards and their providers. So these newer systems have, better, easier data sharing, better user access control, better security. All that being said, at the end of the day, we'll ask for what we want, and we will see what the people who respond to our procurement say they can give us. Does that make it any clearer?
I'm still just a little bit uncomfortable, probably me. So I'm when I worked with software developers, we worked on the customer requirements was job one. That was the first thing you wrote down. And then you'd go off and do magical things in software. I don't know what they did. Really smart people, though. I think what I heard was, you know, we have some requirements, but then we're going to go see what else is available. And I'm not sure I'm hearing it right. I just want to know that the connection to other the providers of benefits and so forth are all going to be tied together, that as your folks go out and do their visits, that's one of the key questions on their mind. How do they do that? And I'm not hearing that clearly enough. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I either need reassurance or I need to know that, oh, we need to go back and re-ask the questions we're asking. So
co-chairs, Representative Reardon, let me try one more time.
Okay.
So yes, it is absolutely our intent to meet with our customers, our stakeholders, our partners in service delivery, and understand their needs. It is not our intent to build a custom application. So we will take those needs and we will put them in a procurement document as clearly as we possibly can, and we will get a system or systems, right? So part of what you're asking is we haven't yet done that work to know the answer. Part of it is with any project, you have to set a scope. Where do you start and where do you end? Who do you please and who don't you please? Yeah. What do you have money to afford to do and what don't you have money? What's your core business and responsibility in terms of modernizing? So it's all of those series of questions that we're now sorting through to put together a path forward that gets us at the enterprise level, all of us, our partners, as much as we can get with the money that we have within the responsibility that we have.
Okay, I think I'm getting it. Thank you for your patience.
Representative Nierman, you have another question?
Good, yeah, and I think this dovetails nicely with Representative Reardon's point there. So I like your answer on that. I like that you use the word enterprise there and partners and those kinds of things, because I hope that's how you look at the DHS and the Department of Corrections. And I'm not enough of a government insider to know who all your partners are. You know that better than I do. And I'll point out, too, there was one thing that I saw in your slide deck that I was very happy about seeing, that was that you wanted to get a very early jump on getting your data mapped and cleaned up and all that. And I suspect that you cheated and you asked the DMV and the Department of Revenue what they did to be successful in their projects, and that was one of the answers that you got there. So, but you're allowed to cheat in this world, so I appreciate that. I'm wondering if you probably aren't to the point where you've made this decision yet, but I hope that when you make a decision as to where to host your data, that that's an important thing, that there's kind of, you have two options there. And I think that, I'll just be blunt about it, I think that with the state, we don't consider the second option, which is a third-party cloud vendor, as opposed to the state data center. I guess there's reasons to pick one over the other, but I hope that both of those get a good fair shake. So can you assure me that that will happen?
Co-chairs, Representative Nierman, members, I do believe that some of the solutions are hosted in the cloud. I'm getting a nod from Ms. Royston. Mm-hmm. So certainly yes, and that, again, that will be part of the kind of ongoing look in trying to stay current with technology as we're kind of chasing it to procure it. So
good. And if I can follow just a little bit.
Okay.
In the year 2022 or thereabouts or something like that, one of your enterprise partners is going to come and say something to me or on this committee or another committee that I might be on, say, hey, we would like some data from the employment department. And the right answer that you're going to give is, that's not a problem, Representative Nierman, or possibly on that date, maybe Senator Nierman or something like that. But that's not a problem, Representative Nierman. We way back in 2018, we spec'd an API to be put on there, and I will be over to the department, Oregon Department of Widgets, to give them the credentials that they need for that API. Our data is already accessible. We built that in. We had the foresight to do that so that the Medicaid Magi can go get the data that they need, because the Trump administration just expired the necessity to not look for work to get welfare or whatever it is, and we have that all set up. Our data is accessible like that. So I hope that's the right answer that you'll give in 2022 or thereabouts.
Co-chairs, Representative Nierman, I absolutely hope to be able to answer that question in the way you just described.
All right. Thank you, Senator Nierman. All right. Are we ready for a recommendation?
Yes. Co-chairs, members of the committee, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending that you acknowledge receipt of this report.
Senator Johnson, any thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation.
Thank you. Colleagues, you have heard the motion. Is there any discussion? And Senator Monroe, we are moving the recommendations to accept the report.
Okay.
So if there's no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion carries. I should have just said any objections, but I was reading my sheet.
Oh.
And I believe we need a carrier to full. Anybody particularly interested in taking this to full? If not,
Representative Noble is on full, and has he carried?
All right.
Got it.
Okay. Very good. All right, make notes of all the questions that Representative Nierman and Senator Johnson posed today, and we'll present those in full as soon as this comes forward. So I'm going to go ahead and close the work session from the Employment Department. Thank you very much, Director, and Ms. Royston, and thank you, colleagues, for your questions. Anything else for the good of the order?
We will see you on Thursday with regard to the agenda item. It is the Housing and Community Services Department and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Presenting on an expenditure plan for about $1.2 million in the lottery funds for veterans housing.
And Ms. Deister and colleagues, I will not be with you on the 15th. I have a schedule conflict that is insurmountable. So with apologies.
Very good. With that, colleagues, we are adjourned.
I'll be here.
Okay.